Bruchim Abayim to the first lecture, the first shia in a new series of shiurim, which is devoted to the thought of Rav Kook, Rav Avraham Yitzchak HaKohen Kook, Zecher Tzadik Levracha. A number of years ago, I think it's Tavshin Samaches, there was published several volumes which were entitled the Shmoyne Kavatzim. Strictly speaking, there were altogether published four volumes. There were two hardcover volumes, which I think were actually had to be called technically Shmoyne Kavatzim, because it actually says, I think one volume is Aleph through Dalet, the next one is Hey through Ches. And then, but together with this, or maybe published a little bit afterwards, was published a soft-covered volume called Kavatzim Miksav Yad Kotchei.
Is there a publisher?
Well, I'm going to get to that. Okay. And then there was another volume, another hardcover volume, which was published after, I think that's the fourth. In any case, the volume which I have in front of me, which is Harav Haraya Kook, Kavatzim Miksav Yad Kotchei, it says Krach Beis, and it's published, it says Yerushalayim Tavshin Sameches, and the publisher of it says, well, it says over here, I'm going to read from the page, Kolas Chuyot Shmurot Machon Lotzad Ginze Haraya, Arichad V'harot Boaz Ofen, and there it says, L'pniyot L'hazmanot, if you want to order the Sefer, so the phone number, the cell phone number is 054, I'm sure they won't mind us publicizing this, right. 054-310-1396. And email, it's Harav Kook, one word, HARAVKOOK at gmail.com. So you can add to your hashkafacircle.com, Harav Kook at gmail.com. Anyway, in any case, now, these volumes evidently were published from Rav Kook's notebooks that Rav Kook had, and the notebooks I guess span over a number of years. The notebook that we're going to focus on is entitled Pinkas Hadapim Aleph. I guess it was a notebook. Pinkas Hadapim, I guess it's a type of a notebook. Aleph, I know it says Aleph. And in parentheses it says Yafo. That's right, the city Yafo.
Ben Hashanim. Tel Aviv wasn't invented yet.
Oh, really? Yeah? Right. Ben Hashanim, between the years, Tav Resh Samach Dalet to Tav Resh Ayin Dalet. So I guess 1906 to 1960. In any case, I'll show you that that's what it says here in the very beginning. This is Pinkas Hadapim Aleph. And if you turn the page, then the it's from Daf Mem Gimel to Daf Pei Zayin. So we're speaking about a total of 44 pages. And what you have is sections. Some are long, some are shorter, and the sections are numbered from 1 until, until Pei Tes, I should say. So a number from 1 until 63. Okay, now we're not going to do all 63, unless there's tremendous demand from the Tzibur.
Tel Aviv was founded in 1909 as a suburb of Yafo.
Very good.
This
is pre-Tel Aviv. Very, very good. Okay, 1906 to 1916. Now, I want to give a little bit of an introduction, because a person cannot just approach the writings of Rav Kook, even though they're very beautiful, very poetic, they give a person a sense of spirituality, inspiration, but many people in fact actually approach the writings of Kook in that way and are very inspired. But to really understand the thought of Rav Kook, a person really has to delve into what are the apparent sources. Now I say apparent sources because at least in the Pinkas Hadapim from Yafo, we have to be aware of two things. Number one is, it's not clear at all that Rav Kook is writing for these works to be published. This was a notebook of his. just like we spoke about in a previous series, in The Emergence of Ethical Man, Rav Soloveitchik had 10 spiral notebooks that were published, right, posthumously. We don't know if Rav Soloveitchik would have, in fact, actually agreed to have them published in the form that they were published, but okay, as they say, the cat was out of the box and that was it. And if a person's interested in that, he should, I'll refer you to the 10 lectures on the emergence of ethical man on hashkafacircle.com. These two, I don't know if there are any heirs or any descendants, but in any case, these are notebooks which Rav Kook, so we have to understand two things. Number one is Rav Kook is writing for himself. So when a person writes for himself, he's not going to quote or cite all of his materials, all of his sources, because he's just writing perhaps to keep a notebook or maybe a diary. Maybe eventually he wants to have it published. But in any case, Rav Kook is not presenting this as something which is going to have, at least in the form it has, we have to assume it's not going to have an audience, which means that many of the sources of Rav Kook, in fact, are absent. So, number one, the job of understanding Rav Kook is really to understand, as you would say in, I guess, yeshivish, where he's coming from. In other words, what are the sources? Rav Kook certainly, as one of the Poiskei HaDor, but also as a tremendous Yadin in Hashkafa, Machshava, and Nigla Nistah, certainly as any person of this sort who writes is in fact actually coming to understand, to interpret, and to extend the sources which already exist. Okay, I'm going to speak a little bit about that, and that's going to be one of the major parts of this series is trying to understand the sources of Rav Kook, okay, which are not always sometimes so easy, because, as I said before, this is the sources of Rav Kook are not only in Kodesh, but also in Chol, as we'll see very, very explicitly. That's point number one. Point number two, in terms of the, even if we understand Rav Kook, Rav Kook writes in very small pieces. And it's very important, in my opinion, to see the forest, to see the forest beyond the trees. In other words, if we don't have a sense of what Rav Kook is trying to do, right, what in fact actually is the focus or the central point of his thinking, then we're very likely, as I think most people do, is take little short pieces and try to understand them independently. We do get inspired by them, but in fact, actually, there's no theme. There's no thematic thought which runs through all the writings. So what we're going to try to do, is try to understand the common theme which cuts across all of these individual pieces. And Mitzvah Hashem, there is a theme which cuts across the, as I said before, the 63 sections. We will not do 63 sections. Matriya Sag, which is one of the Shemes Hashem with the Miloy. But in any case, what?
Number of Mishnah.
In any case, we're going to try our best to understand these things. Okay, now, of course, one does not approach Rav Kook in a vacuum. Now, I would like just to mention is that in the Sefer Orot HaKodesh, Eres HaKodesh of Rav Kook, which as you all know is published by Mossad Rav Kook, I think it's in four volumes, so there's an introduction, Hakdama, from the Nazir, David Cohen. David Cohen was the Nazir, the famous Nazir, and it's a very interesting introduction. He speaks about how he first met Rav Kook. He was in Switzerland, he was in university studying philosophy, and he hears that the Rav is staying not far away, and after being Teufel in the Rhine River, in Germany, I guess the German, Switzerland. Switzerland, whatever, that's what he says. Maybe Rav Kook was in Germany, and he had the Shari Kedusha, he comes to Rav Kook, this is Rosh Chodesh Elul Tafresh Ayin Hay, which interesting enough is this was during this period of time that Rav Kook was writing. Right, Rav Kook must have gone to Europe and come back, and he writes this over there. And anyway, he speaks about how he became a Talmud of Rav Kook, and that, in fact, actually, he He asked Rav Kook that he, in fact, actually wanted to know, wanted to really, to gain a, you know, to gain understanding, to learn the machshava, the thought of Rav Kook. Rav Kook refers him to his writings. It's a very interesting introduction, which I'm not going to go into now. I think I recommend those of you who have the Ohr to get the Ohr to have to look at it. But what's interesting is that, Rav Kook, and this is things that, you know, when he heard from Rav Kook, he said he edited the works and he consulted Rav Kook on a regular basis. So Rav Kook speaks about different levels, speaks about Kodesh, Chiyas Oilamos, Achtos HaKoleles, Atov HaKoleles, Alus HaOilam. It's interesting that Rav Kook refers him to the Sifrei HaRamchal, and particularly refers to him to the Sefer Das Tevunos and Klach Pischei Chochma. That's what he writes about on page 21 in the introduction. Another interesting thing is, he says when the Rav was in Yafo, which is during these years too, so a certain Dr. Kaminka visited him, and Dr. Kaminka visited him, and he published an article that he found a similarity between the thoughts of Rav Kook and the thoughts of the philosopher Bergson. Now, if you listen to the lectures on HashkafaCircle.com on Emergence of Ethical Man, you will see there that, in fact, Rabbi Shaber Soloveitchik's philosophy is, in a certain sense, very much based upon the philosophy of Bergson, especially his book, Two Sources of Morality and Religion. In any case, I think I mentioned in those lectures too that there were parallels between the Shaber Soloveitchik's thought and Rav Kook's thoughts. I think I mentioned it in those lectures. So here you're getting it in these series of lectures. We're going to look at the Makor, the source, and there's no question about it that Rav Kook's thinking certainly, if not based on, at least has many ideas in common with the philosophy of Bergson, as well as other things, as we'll see Mitzvah Shem. So therefore, we have over here that, in fact, we're going to actually, the approach that we're going to take to Rav Kook's writings is, number one, we're going to look for the sources. And in this first piece, the sources certainly seem to be located in the Ramchal, right? Not the Mesilas Yesharim, in the Derech Hashem. And after we look at the sources, we're going to actually discuss Rav Kook's thinking in terms of a wider panorama of the more basic themes of his thought in general. Now, I want to actually give a little bit of introduction to the thought of Rav Kook, and we'll develop this in Yitzhak Shem as we go through these Kisveyat. And I think it's very important to understand the Ramchal, especially because Rav Kook tells his Talmud, the Nazir, to take a look at the Das Tevunos and the Klach Pischei Chochma. Now, of course, what does the Das Tevunos have to do with the Klach Pischei Chochma? But if a person picks up, let's say, the Das Tevunos, actually the standard version, which is of Chaim Friedlander's Atzal's edition of the Das Tevunos, you'll see that in the back of the Das Tevunos is something called the Sefa Klole. The proper limud of the Das Tevunos, which is, of course, not done at all today, is after a person has an understanding, has gone through, I guess thoroughly, the Eitz Chaim of the Ari, then a person has to look at actually the Sefer Klolim. Sefer Klolim, the Klach B'Sei Chochma. And there, the Ramchal presents us with his understanding, we'll say his interpretation, understanding of the Kabbalah of the Ari. We refer to this as this understanding of the Ari to be the Kabbalah of the Ramchal. And the Kabbalah of the Ramchal, right, as he understands the Ari, appears in several places of Ramchal. In particular, I think it appears in the Klach Pischei Chochma and the Sefer Klolim, which I'm going to use Mitzvah today, because I think the Klolim, right, which is the Ramchal's understanding of the Kabbalah of the Ari, lends it, is actually the bridge between what the Ari understood, what the Ramchal understood to be the Mashal of the Ari, and the Nimshal, which in fact the Rabcha presents in the Das Tevunais. So in other words, therefore we have actually a tripartite, in other words, a process. There's the Kabbalah of the Ari in the Eitz Chaim, whatever others follow the Ari. And then there's the Sefer Klalim, which really, actually, if you actually read carefully in Sefer Klalim, it appears that Ramcha was actually giving a shir on the Eitz Chaim, and the Klalim wrote as a taich, as a pelish on the Eitz Chaim. It's very, very clear that that's what he was doing. Or he's giving a shir and sugyas on the Eitz Chaim, and actually he was lending his own understanding and insight. And then, on the basis of the Klalim, one can come to what's called the Nimsha, which is the Das Tevunos, in which the Ramchal presents his historiography, his understanding of the history of the world, where HaKadosh Baruch Hu, through his desire l'heitiv, tries to reveal to man Yichudai, his unity. We're going to speak about these two concepts, which I think people using this will be able to understand what they're talking about. But in any case,
Klach fit into this trilogy?
Klach is also, I think, I understand the Klach to be an expansion of, no, the Klach is also on the Eitz Chaim, but I think it's type of an expanded version of the Klalim. The Klach basically is giving the Ramchal's taich, Ramchal's understanding and interpretation of the Ari's Kabbalah. Ramchal takes the Ari's Kabbalah and he extends it. I mean, I'm not going to give you a shield of Ramchal, but partly. And he extends the Kabbalah of the Ari, as we'll see, in which not only does it incorporate the material world, but also incorporates the Ramchal's understanding of evil, of Ra, and the rectification of evil as part of the historiographical process, which eventually leads to Yemos Mashiach, and to Olam Haba, and so on and so forth. Okay, so that's the Ramchal. Now, what was Rav Kook's? I'm going to call it Rav Kook's Kabbalah. What was Rav Kook's Kabbalah? Even though Rav Kook does not really write extensively, per se, on Kabbalah, but clearly Kabbalah pervades all of his writings, and it's very clear, and certainly in the Pinkas HaDappen from Yafo, Tafri Samach Dalet, that Rav Kook has the Kabbalah of the Ramchal in mind. It seems to me that Rav Kook also wanted to establish a system of thinking, of interpretation of the Kabbalah, but whereas the Ramchal was concerned with good and evil, and the rectification of evil, and a historical process in which HaKadosh Baruch Hu would eventually reveal to man his unity, where in fact all of evil misfortune and tragedy in the world would be the means of revealing to man God's ultimate, I would say, both ontological and ethical unity. Rav Kook was interested in doing something similar. Except that Rav Kook was focusing not so much on traditional ethics, or, you know, evil per se, the general notion of evil, but I think Rav Kook was focusing on what he saw were the very deep, profound, and radical changes which he saw in his lifetime. And these are changes in science, changes in sociology, changes in politics, changes in man's apprehension, man's Wissenschaft, turns and attitudes. In other words, Rav Kook lived at a time when the world was radically changing. And in fact, the world was radically changing in a certain sense, where that Rav Kook understood that this change was in fact a tofa'ah, a phenomena of what Rav Kook understood to be a spiritual ascension of the world, which, by the way, is not only a concept of the Ramchal, of course it's a concept of the Ari. The Chiddush, the novel point of the Kabbalah of the Ramchal, was that in fact, whereas the Kabbalah of the Ari, in my humble opinion, is really focused on Atzilus, on the spiritual worlds. The Ari is not really focused so much on the physical worlds, but only on the spiritual worlds. The purpose of man is to rectify the Masaken, the Atzilus. The physical worlds, the worlds of Pirut, only are not really worlds in a certain sense, but since they contain the parts of what's called the broken vessels, man has to bring Kedusha from the physical worlds and transform them to rectify the spiritual worlds of Atzilus. the Ramchal's Kabbalah was very, very much associated with the physical world too, because evil, as evil as we know it, is a phenomenon in the physical world. Rav Kook, I won't say expanded Ramchal's project, but in fact, Rav Kook, in fact, operates in the same way, in a parallel fashion as the Ramchal. Rav Kook is also interested, concerned with the physical world. But Rav Kook is interested in what I call the, as with Rav Chal, is interested in evil and misfortune and tragedy and history. I think Rav Kook really has an interest in intellectual topics, philosophy, science, sociology. Rav Kook is in fact reacting to a world which is radically being transformed at the very, very end of the 19th century, beginning of the 20th century. We have important revolutions in science, revolutions in other, right, in other aspects. What?
Political revolutions.
Political revolutions, et cetera, right? The world is a transformed world. And Rav Kook is trying to understand this world, right, within the general scheme of the spiritualizing of the world. As the world, worlds rise, and the world becomes increasingly spiritual in accordance with the Kabbalah of the Ramchal and of the Ari. And this is really, in fact, the theme of Rav Kook's works. How are we to understand the spiritual ascension of the physical world, which will incorporate, right, the important intellectual, sociological, political changes which Rav Kook was witness to in the end of the 19th, the beginning of the 20th century. I would say that this, in my opinion, this very, very succinctly summarizes the thought of Rav Kook. Meaning that really to understand Rav Kook, one, just like Rabbi Shabbat Soloveitchik, one really has to have a certain sense, an understanding, if not a mastery, an understanding about the spiritual, the sources in Kodesh and the sources in Chol. That's very, very important. Rav Kook is actually going to drop us a few names here and there. This first piece is going to speak about Spinoza and Kant. But in other words, behind Rav Kook does not explicitly mention secular sources as much as the Bishop of Soloveitchik, but nonetheless it's clear from his writings who he's referring to, among which are, in fact, actually the philosopher Bergson. So this is actually the introduction as we approach the first section of Rav Kook. Now the first section of Kook, as I said before, is section number one in the Pinkas HaDapim. And it appears in the Sefer, in this soft covered volume, Daf Mem Gimel, and then it's two sides, Daf Mem Gimel and Daf Mem Dalet. Okay. Now I'm going to read Rav Kook. I'm going to have to indulge the listener to read and translate him. I mean, I think those of you know me. Not that I always make fun of people who read and translate, but the fact is that before we understand Rav Kook, we actually have to read and translate, and that's very important. Because Rav Kook does not write only prose, he writes poetry. Rav Kook is a poet, and his writing is also poetic too. Even when he writes prose, it's a type of poetry, it's a type of literature. So I think I'm going to begin, and we're going to begin Daf Mem Gimel, which is section one of the Pinkas HaDapim Aleph, which is from Yafo, between the years Tafresh Samach Dalet, Tafresh Ayin Dalet, Bishnoisam, 1906 to 1916. Okay. Says Rav Kook, Al Pi Rov, says Rav Kook, usually, generally, most of the time, Hatzara Elyon, Shibamachshava Elokis, the higher side, right, or the upper side of Machshava Elokis, as we're called, Machshava Elokis refers to theology, right, divine thought, thinking about, that divine thought doesn't mean the thought of God, it means the thought of man, right, thinking about God. Shuyesim Meil Mavik, which illuminates, which is more illuminating and more brilliant. Mach shechu es ha'or shel ha'tzara tachton sheba, it darkens the light of the lower side of the thought of the divine. We'll call it the thought of the divine. So in other words, Rav Kook identifies what is a higher side, an upper part of thought of the divine. This is Rav Kook, that its illumination and brilliance, even though it's more illuminating, more brilliant than the lower side, nonetheless it tends to darken the light of the lower side of the thought of the divine. And says of Kook that sometimes, I think he really means here many times, Darki Achayim, when Rav Kook says Darki Achayim, it literally means the way of life. But I think Darki Achayim, we'll see, really means the spiritual part of what I would call mundane life. Noivim Mismashchem, they emanate Mitzara Tachtoi, from the lower thought of the divine, hakolav lemaisa, which is close to act ulegvul mesuyim, into boundaries. In other words, what Rav Kook is saying is that we have the spirituality which emanates from the mundane world, right? When Rav Kook says chayim, he usually means the spirituality comes from the mundane world, and says Rav Kook is that sometimes the upper thought of the divine is machshech, darkens the lower thought, which is connected with the imminent spirituality within the mundane world, within life itself. It goes to Rav Kook and
sometimes,
says...
usually.
Right, okay. Lefam means sometimes.
I'll be Rav.
Right, okay, whatever it is. How will we translate that? I'm going to use a used translation. Right, because he says Alpi Rav, he says Lefamim. Once again, you know, I'm sure he probably wrote this one time and that was it. But I'm going to, having gone through this many, many times, I'm going to use a loose translation. And those of you can look at it and you can compare your own understanding. Kshatzara elyuni de oire hu mechayet azoyo mayet azakoyav shal atzara tachto, in shemokshom elokis. So when the upper side of the divine light darkens the zaya, the splendor, and mamait, and lessens the strength of the lower part of the thought of the divine, where this happens, as im oisa ha'orel yoyna lochado adayin kolkach achitete b'koich ha'godol es kol ha'mshocha shal ha'rayon, shal ha'maisa, shal ha'musuf shal ha'meretz, shesar ha'tachto ha'noisin ha'sam. So in other words, like this, let's have cooked like this. The problem is that mice, acts, musa, ethics, merits, I think Rav Kook understands energy, but merits really means sort of like human acts, really emerge, or they're grounded in the lower side. So what happens is Rav Kook says that if the ha'or el yoyna, the higher light, the higher emanation, associated with the higher, upper part of the thought of the divine, has not penetrated, right, properly, that it can in fact actually contribute to act, to ethics, that usually the lower side provides. So what happens is this upper light is actually going to, in a certain sense, is going to undo. Hachsholas Achayim is actually going to bring about a stumbling block, and in fact, maybe pervert the Chayim, which is the spiritual part of mundane life. L'miyat HaKoyach, L'rifyan HaMusa is going to cause a lessening of ethics, U'l'chul Shas HaNefesh, and weakening man's spiritual capacity. What Rav Kook is saying is, it's enough that this higher light can actually mess up the imminent ethics and acts of the mundane world. That's what Rav Kook is saying. Very interesting.
Naturally, a person is an ethical person.
No, he's not saying anything. He says that ethics emerges from a lower, lower idea,
a natural state without the intellect.
I don't want to merge the tangents. Right. All Rav Kook is saying is that ethics and the immanental spiritual side of man which we associate with the physical world around us, right, can be darkened and actually ruined by a higher spiritual life, light. That's what Rav Kook is saying.
You're too much attention, but is the lower thing similar to the animal soul or something like that?
I don't want to go into Balatanya and anything like this. This is Rav Kook. Rav Kook understands that the ethics, whatever it is, Rav Kook understands. I don't see any Tanya in Rav Kook, by the way. It's all Rav Kook. But anyway, like this. Rav Kook, there's more Tanya in Rav Yashaber than Rav Kook. In any case, the ethics and spiritual acts of man within the mundane world have their source because of the proximity to the lower thought of the divine, and the upper thought of the divine, even though its light is more brilliant and more illuminating, if it doesn't penetrate properly, it's klapt nicht zusammen, it doesn't, right? It's not properly attuned. Well, many times, most of the times, actually affect negatively man's mundane innate ethics and moral and spiritual sense within the physical world. That's what Rav Kook is saying. Okay? So says Rav Kook. So, how does a person connect to the highest spiritual lights if in fact actually it can in fact serve to as a negative effect on his lower spiritual life? So when the higher light, which Rav Kook associates with the higher thought divine, you know, comes close to the physical, to the lower world, it has to come mediated through the lower light. In other words, the higher light cannot directly come into the lower mundane world. It has to somehow be mediated through the lower light. Okay? In other words, what is it mediated? It means that the ha'achon atzmo, the lower light, has to first provide its light. V'yiten neshama chadasha b'toch ha'maaser, and has to give a new soul into physical acts. Har geshem, right? Which are feelings, machshavis, and thoughts. In other words, feelings, thoughts, acts, these are all part of man's imminent, mundane world. And the whole spectrum of life, which means imminent spiritual life, that comes from the machshava taktona thought, the lower thought of the divine. Now, only when the lower thought has properly prepared, has properly penetrated and rectified the mundane world, then the higher light can now penetrate and come into the mundane world and affect it spiritually without any damage. That's what Rav Kook says. Okay? So, in other words, Rav Kook is saying, let's summarize, right? If we try to connect this with everything else we've learned, then we're going to be totally confused. Rav Kook is saying is that there's an innate spiritual content to the mundane physical world, which he calls the machshava tachtoina, the lower thought of the divine. He calls the or hatachtoin, the lower light. And this innate spiritual divine content of the physical world, in fact, has to first be rectified by the lower light before, at a later stage, the higher light, the or ha'elyoi, the higher thought of the divine, can make its connection with the physical world. So, of course, if the lower light has not properly penetrated and affected the spiritual content of the lower mundane world, then the higher light, which comes to penetrate into the mundane world, could cause more damage than good, and will actually uproot the spiritual content of the mundane world, right, which Rav Kook associates with ethics and proper thoughts and proper feelings, etc., etc. Okay, that's what Cook is saying. Okay, now, let's go on to the second paragraph. Okay, do we have time for... How much do we have left?
You know the time. Keep going.
Okay, fine. Now, I can actually launch into an understanding of what Cook is saying, but I think it's probably better to continue with the second paragraph. And Rav Kook begins the second paragraph by saying, Moshel Adava. Now, a Moshel means a metaphor, but this is not a metaphor. When Rav Kook says, Moshel Adava, Rav Kook says he's going to actually go into this in much more detail and describe exactly, in more detail, what is the lower thought, what is the higher thought, what is the spiritual content of the mundane world, and all the concepts that he mentioned in the first paragraph, which is a type of an introduction. Moshel Adava. So Rav Kook says, if we actually examine these ideas which I mentioned in more detail. There are two sides. But I would say there's two dimensions of apprehension of the divine. Hasaga elokus. Hasaga ishis. There's the personal apprehension. Vasaga klolis. Hasaga klolis, literally translated, means the general apprehension, but I would say this is much more a philosophical metaphysical apprehension. In other words, there's the human apprehension, and then there's the philosophical metaphysical apprehension. That's how I would translate them. Kloima, that is to say, Hasaga rishayna, the first apprehension, which Rav Kook calls the human individual apprehension, umasha yediyah ba, right? This is where the knowledge comes. Lemso es mitzias elokus b'toicha oila. In other words, the first apprehension, the human individual apprehension, comes when we seek to find the divine within our world, the physical world. Lahakiras habeya mitoich nivav. To understand or to recognize the Creator from the creation. Because we don't go directly to the Creator, we first try to understand the creation. We try to understand the Creator from the creation. One of Bayre, Bri, and Yetzira are usually used as different verbs. The Bri is being Jesh B'ayin and Yetzira being Jesh B'yesh, but I don't think Cook is referring to that. I think he's just writing poetically. Now, the recognition of the recognition of the metzias of the mundane world, the ontology of the physical world, einu gomeres es osher rak b'metzias levav. In other words, its true wealth does not begin just with the facts of the mundane world by itself. Kim holeches va'ela arasoka shleimus agabora. This actually can ascend to the complete perfection, right? The Ein Sof of the infinite. Now, we're speaking about the lower thought, by the way. In other words, the lower thought rises from the physical world in a sense, not like the higher thought, right? And this gives birth to many ideas and many feelings, which interplay with each other, right? And when these things come together and they achieve a harmony, then they produce simcha, right? Which are mundane feelings of simcha, of happiness, ava, love, gvura, right? Right? Of strength. Together with the essence of the divine, the pleasantness of the divine, and the perfection of Musa, of ethics, and of the spiritual kind of life come from them. This refers to the lower thought of the divine. This refers to the Or HaTachton. The Or HaTachton basically begins with the ontology of the physical mundane world, and it rises to which a person now becomes attuned to a spiritual content which brings about, which brings a person to ethical and I guess imminent spiritual perfection, and brings about in the person the feelings of simcha, ava, and gevura, which is happiness, love, and strength. Now, that's one level. There comes another level. Amnon b'aliyah yisel yoyna. But there's another aliyah, a second stage. This is a higher level. Hamachshava oyla rasoga klalis. In a second stage, man now is not apprehending the imminent ontology of the physical world, but there's a philosophical, hasoga klalis, is a philosophical, metaphysical apprehension. And this apprehension comes to a point which recognizes nothing but God. Everything is divine. Allah is Eibishter. And all the boundaries and the distinctions within the mundane world, hastios ha-pirudim, the contradictions and dichotomies, einem el nitzutzei dimyon, only in imagination. Everything is Eibishter. Shelgabi ha-metzias ha-mises einem b'chlam metzias, which don't even exist, because the true existence is only God. She'einem mitzad pirudim ki'im pegom shel eider. In other words, basically these are things which don't exist. Because really, there's only the unity of all of reality. And this philosophical, metaphysical understanding of the ontology of the world, right, reaches to its highest heights. Paschalosa, in the very beginning, he doimel ha'avon ha'shpinozit. In other words, the beginning, it's the Spinoza-type apprehension, where basically everything is God. No, that's what you said. Everything is God. Ha'imeres would say, she'en shum davakim elokim. There's nothing but God. Everything is divine extension. Vasogas kulam heinem tari elokus. And all apprehensions are really just attributes, divine attributes. Right? You obviously read Spinoza. Omnam, nonetheless, says Rav Kook. Let's go a little bit further. Rav Kook is actually taking us on a trip of modern philosophy. Spinoza, I guess, is end of the 17th century, and then we come to Kant now, who's in the end of the 18th century. Nonetheless, when a person faces the fact that there are boundaries and weaknesses, and right, and there's an ugly side which revealed in Metzius, which a person cannot necessarily identify with divine attributes and extension. But of course, a person, the divine perfection, is a person being pulled by the idea of divine perfection. Then we come to the Kantian understanding of the world. Because the world, the thing in and of itself, is not really the, in other words, we don't really see the world the way it really is. What we see is a, in fact, let the Rav speak, right? And everything that we see, we only see sort of like a shadow. And we speak about ugliness, resha, evil, chulshava, absent, weakness, and loss. It's only from the human point of view, the Kantian transcendental. Okay. What is Rav Kook getting at? What's he saying here? We're ascending. In other words, Rav Kook spoke about spiritual ascension from the physical. But then he went to a second stage, which is the Ora Elyon in a certain sense. And here, Rav Kook speaks about a philosophical and metaphysical apprehension of reality, which begins with a complete immanence, which Rav Kook terms a Spinozian philosophical thing of the world, which itself, right, in fact, rises to a Kantian understanding of the world, where in fact the world, the thing of itself, is a certain type of a, Rav Kook calls it a tzel, a shadow, but a, you would say something which is a opaque box, right, which has the imprint of the transcendental, of man's understanding of reality itself. Now,
are these both in the Elyon?
Yeah, both of these are the Elyon. Both of the Elyon, right, both of the Elyon. Right? וכן אנו רואים את עצמנו גם כמצד הצלולי אבי יוסו כולה בכל, אבל לפי האמס הכל שולם מוות כמו המשוכלו, והולך מיית, etc. etc. Okay, now, the cook goes on, and I think at this point, we're going to have to, I know, you know, we're rising. We feel already inspired, but I want to go back and say, what is Rav Kook speaking about? What is he trying to describe? In Mirtz Hashem, the next Shia, we're going to actually take a look at the sources of Rav Kook, which are real sources, in the Ramchal. And the base of this, we're going to see how Rav Kook is actually transforming the Ramchal into a new Mashal and a new Nimshal. Until that time, for an undisclosed location, Yerushalayim HaKadosh, be well.